Monster Man, special episode, Mutants and Beast Men. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Spiros. If you'd like to be like Spiros and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get the rewards for all other levels, including all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So Spiros, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Spiros has asked me to talk about two of the core creatures of the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay Bestiary, Mutants and Beastmen. I'm going to start by talking about their history in terms of the game's design, then talk about their background in the game itself, and then talk about what I think they mean and how they're used. So, mutants have been part of the Warhammer aesthetic since forever. Indeed, they've really been part of it since before there was Warhammer. Like a lot of things in the Games Workshop world, they started out as a primarily visual thing. That is, they started out as just kind of like things sculptors like to sculpt and artists like to draw, and then they were codified primarily in the Realm of Chaos books for Warhammer Fantasy Battle. They're basically, you know, people with tentacles or eye stalks or whatever, and they originate, I should think, from the enthusiasm of 80s artists and sculptors for all things that are weird and grotesque. But also, mutants, mutated creatures, mutated humans were very much in the zeitgeist in the 1970s and 80s. So obviously, we're thinking about X-Men here, which had come out in the 60s and kind of not really gone anywhere, and then experienced a big revival in the 70s that would really go on throughout the 80s and 90s. But in a specifically British context, I think that Warhammer's mutants owe more to the mutants from the comic strip Strontium Dog, which appeared in 2000 AD, but I think originally appeared in Star-Lord before the magazines were combined. I could be wrong about that, but I think that that's correct. The mutants in Strontium Dog are much more obviously kind of grotesque than their counterparts in a Marvel comic. Initially, at least, the mutants in X-Men aren't all that weird looking, right? They're just people with superpowers, and Beast is a little bit funny looking, I guess. They're not really all that grotesque. The most grotesque Marvel heroes are not mutants or characters like the Thing and the Hulk. But that grotesque aesthetic and the idea of mutants as an outcast or underclass, those I think translated across from things like Strontium Dog into the mutants of the Warhammer world. And it helped that these were creatures who could be converted. It was sometimes hard to find the precise miniature for the thing you wanted, and therefore you had to convert, you know, swapping heads or weapons on a model or even sculpting parts of it from scratch. And that became a form of creativity, a game almost in its own right, and the creation of weird mutants was a big part of that. You only have to look at any collection of Citadel miniatures from the 80s. You'll find some good examples in there. So that's mutants, essentially, I think, originating with a visual aesthetic. Now, the idea of Beast Men, by contrast, comes largely from another RPG. Beast Men in Warhammer Fantasy are very much the brew from RuneQuest, although they lack some of the truly horrific elements of the brew, which we've talked about in previous episodes, and which are scaled down in contemporary RuneQuest as well. I think fair enough. But Games Workshop was, of course, the publisher of the British edition of RuneQuest, just as it was for other Chaosium games like Stormbringer or Call of Cthulhu. When GW stopped publishing RuneQuest, the brew models and images persisted. In fact, if you look at Ravening Hordes, a supplement for Warhammer Fantasy Battle 2nd edition, you'll see that the illustration of a beast man is clearly intended to be a brew. The stone that he's standing on has Glorantha runes carved into it. Now, like the brew, the beast men initially were supposed to be like freakish and weird, and they're like camel people and, I don't know, ostrich people and so forth, but they gradually became standardized in sort of goat man form. And that's true of the brew as well. I mean, I think when most people think of a brew, they think of a goat. But in fact, brew can look like anything. The most famous individual brew looks like a unicorn. But so they became mostly sheep or goat-like and lost their varied look, partly because that's what was happening in RuneQuest, but I think also because the more uniform appearance was more pleasing in like a regiment of models. So if you're playing Warhammer, a certain uniformity, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think it was an aesthetic that people were looking for. The idea of Beastmen, like the idea of Chaos, came across from RuneQuest, although of course Chaos in Warhammer also owes a lot to Michael Moorcock. So if these are the origins of these creatures, what are they like in the games that they appear in? In the Warhammer setting as it eventually shook out, mutants are humans who've been affected by the corrupting influence of Chaos. They're all different. They might have quite subtle mutations that are hard to notice. There's an example in the scenario Night of Blood of a mutant who just has like quite large buggy eyes. It is a mutation, but it's sort of close enough that he can pass for a human who just has kind of a perpetually surprised expression. And, you know, maybe he could wear some glasses or something to help conceal them or whatever. Other mutants have much more obvious mutations, and these are pushed to the fringes of human society, if not killed. So they live in undesirable areas. They live in the woods. They live, you know, on the outskirts of town. They live in the sewers. They live in places where they can avoid the authorities. You know, they have to turn to banditry and whatever just to survive, whereas those that can pass for human live in fear of persecution or act as clandestine agents of Chaos cults, or both. By contrast, beastmen are brutal creatures that live in tribes and, I don't know, hordes. Unlike mutants, they're sort of tougher than humans. I feel like they have an extra point of toughness. I could be wrong. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're a little more capable in a fight than an ordinary human, which a mutant might not be. They inhabit wild, faraway places. They're described in later Warhammer stuff as being like a migratory. I don't know how early that goes, but that idea that a large number of beastmen will move into your territory, and even if you don't like have to face them in battle, they might eat all the grain or whatever. But in addition to these big beastman hordes that sweep across the landscape, there are also isolated packs and groups of beastmen just dwelling really in any wild place, even in woods and wildernesses within the civilized empire itself. Now, I mentioned previously the scenario Night of Blood, a classic Warhammer Fantasy roleplay adventure that first appeared in an issue of White Dwarf, and it involves both mutants and beastmen. In it, the player characters stumble on an inn that's been taken over by mutant cultists who have murdered the original inhabitants of the inn and are up to no good. But the scenario starts with the PCs being chased into the inn by beastmen in the woods, right? It's the fact that beastmen are in the woods that forces them to seek shelter. Well, not just the fact that beastmen are in the woods, but like bad weather in general. It is sort of, the scenario is maybe a little overly concerned with getting the PCs to stay at the inn, when in general, PCs quite like staying at inns. But also, the presence of the beastmen in the woods is there to make you think that the threat is going to be defending the inn from the monsters, and not discovering that there are monsters within the inn itself, if that makes sense. So in the scenario, these two threats are contrasted. The threat outside is represented by the beastmen, while the threat within is represented by the mutants. And of course, that threat is literally within the inn, but it's also within the threat of mutation inside all of us, right? And the threats overlap, right? Beastmen are out there in far lands, but they're also in the woods. Lots of Chaos Warbands include both beastmen and mutants. There are mutants who live with and cooperate with beastmen. There's a spectrum that connects the internal and external threats, and aren't really separate things. So what is the nature of mutation? What is it that differentiates a mutant and a beastman? The difference between something like a beastman and something like a mutant is that beastmen are, I mean, genetically is a weird word to apply to this setting, but genetically stable. So two beastmen will have a beastman child. By contrast, anybody can have a mutant child. And all beastmen are pretty similar in terms of their physical qualities, whereas mutants are all different. Indeed, you may not necessarily be born a mutant. I think you can mutate when exposed to the power of Chaos. And that contagion can be both physical and sort of moral. The physical effects of mutation can result from moral corruption. So if you serve the Chaos Gods and attract their attention to you, they might, quote-unquote, reward you with a mutation. But it could also just be exposure to the magical power of chaos. So for example, if you just spend a lot of time around the chaotic mineral Warpstone, then you might find yourself starting to mutate. And there is some literature that suggests that this mutation brings with it the mental corruption of chaos. So there's one of the Warhammer novels focuses on a character who discovers that he has begun to mutate, and he realizes as time passes that he is thinking chaotic thoughts. He knows things about the Chaos Gods and Chaos beliefs, even though he's never learned them. They are inherent to him. It feels a little bit like a justification to say that mutants are inherently evil. And in that sense, the literature has some unpleasant implications if you think about it. Deviations from some imagined physical ideal as signs of moral degeneration and all that. But one thing that I do like about the handling of mutation in particular, and a lot of issues in Warhammer in general, is that the multivocal nature of this setting, which has had 4 editions of a role-playing game and 8 editions of a war game, and then 3 editions of a different war game, and however many computer games, novels, comics, etc., etc., the multivocal nature of that setting means that a lot of topics are, because different authors have handled them differently, somewhat ambiguous. Are mutants evil by nature, or are they forced to banditry and chaos because they're excluded from the setting's intolerant and paranoid society? It can work either way. Ultimately, the question is whether you like your setting grim, zealous, and fanatical, or grim, depressing, and cynical. That's Warhammer for you. The ambiguity of the mutant means that it is a foe that is grotesque and frightening. In the formulation that I apply to a lot of chaos things, you don't want them to get you, but you also don't want to end up like them. But also, with mutants, there's a little aspect of the pathetic. If you kill a beast man, you feel that you've had a lucky escape. But if you kill a mutant, you might feel quite bad about it afterward. The fact that you can see through your enemy's skin so that you can see all their bones and organs is not really a tactical advantage. He's just got a condition. And I think it's the fear of the mutant that sort of illuminates what I think is the key difference between these two kinds of monsters. Because mutants and beastmen play on different kinds of fear. The mutant, in some ways, is more of a horror monster. It's insidious and creepy. By contrast, the beastman, or maybe I should say it's like a grotesque monster. It's shocking in its appearance. It's shocking in its implications. Whereas you could say the same about the Beastman, but the Beastman is more focused on physical threat. It's a creature of brute ferocity, bigger and stronger than a human, and quote-unquote savage. It's interesting that the sort of savage, animalistic creature is a sheep, not known for being like the most dangerous and aggressive animals out there, but they pull it off. In fact, you know, when you consider that both Beastmen and mutants are things that you might find in a Chaos Warband, when you add in the kind of, you know, sneaky Chaos Cultist and the uncanny demons, you've got a pretty good mix of different kinds of horror and threat, nonetheless thematically connected within this overarching framework of chaos. They all blend together to a certain extent. They overlap. They're not identical. That's something that is not quite unique to chaos within the Warhammer settings. You can see this a little bit within the undead, but in general, pretty much every orc unit is a dopey lummox of some kind. They're just on a scale from little dopey lummoxes to really big dopey lummoxes. And some of them are a little bit more aggressive, and some of them are a little bit more kind of stolid. But for the most part, it's dopey lummoxes all the way down. Orcs are thematically consistent, thematically united. But the Beastman, the Mutant, and the Demon are thematically complementary. They're not exactly the same. And in this way, I would say that they are a good example of like monster palette design, and I would support that position more if Games Workshop weren't constantly trying to walk back from this. One of the phenomena that you get in later Warhammer is a lot of subdivision. So where once there were undead, now there are Tomb Kings, who are the dry undead, and Vampire Counts, who are the wet undead, etc., etc., right? So they're sort of taking these things and splitting them into things that are thematically unified. And that makes sense, I would argue, in the context of a war game, because particularly smaller war games armies, if they include a lot of different types of units not just that have different abilities, but that have different tones, different aesthetics, different meanings, they can start to feel kind of bitty. This was a complaint about Realm of Chaos style armies that's discussed in the second edition Warhammer 40k Chaos Codex. They say that Chaos armies don't feel unified. They feel like a big grab bag collection of different things. They're meant to be a paint box full of different colors that you can create a specific thing with, but they wind up being people just trying to have one of everything. But in general, I would say that thematically complementary monster palettes, as opposed to thematically identical ones, fit better into a role-playing game than into a war game. And although I like war games, it's role-playing games that we're here to talk about. It's also the case that at the lower tiers of the sort of chaos monster roster, the hierarchy of enemies, you get mutants, weird, ambiguous monsters, whereas by contrast, there's not a lot of ambiguity in a great unclean one, right? Mutants are a little queasier. Even if they're totally evil, they may once have had jobs, homes, and families. They're a little too like you for the encounter to be really comfortable. And I would say that that uncomfortable ambiguity is something that is present in things like Strontium Dog. Maybe it's there in X-Men to a certain extent, but X-Men is so heightened, you know. The characters, the mutants, are presented as powerful, whereas there's more of a pathetic aesthetic in something like Strontium Dog. Although, to be honest with you, I haven't read a whole lot of Strontium Dog. But that kind of uncomfortable ambiguity, and using that ambiguity to create a space for creators to play in, I would say overall is more characteristic of British media. So if you look at the themes of Strontium Dog and X-Men in some ways, they're similar, but the presentation of those themes is very different just in terms of the tonality of these two things. And I think that the Warhammer tonality initially is much more like something like Strontium Dog. So what does this mean for your game? Well, if you're playing Warhammer, then no problem, right? Mutants have a pretty defined role within society. They're either the insidious agents of chaos within civilization, or they're the desperate dregs pushed to the fringes of society, either because of their chaotic nature or as a result of this being pushed to the fringes of society, easy prey for chaos. If you want to take the same thing and put it into a different setting, I think that's a little more challenging because the Warhammer setting really relies on some of these assumptions about there being like this primary cosmic threat of chaos, and also the idea that the Imperium has this kind of xenophobic pop culture version of Matthew Hopkins' witch hunting society. If you don't have that in your fantasy setting, then what I would recommend is that you focus on the personal horror aspect of the mutant. The idea that this is a change that affects this person, and you know, maybe they're not too happy about it, and that something similar could happen to you. Nobody wants to start gaining chaos attributes and, you know, grow a third eye or bat wings or whatever. Even if having a third eye or bat wings is quite advantageous, you can still portray it in a way that reflects the true horror of the situation. One thing that I do think Beastmen, by contrast, you know, I like a Beastman. The problem with Beastmen, I think, is that the Beastmen are portrayed as creatures of like bone-crunching savagery. The Brew were a more insidious threat, but in general, when I see an animal person in a fantasy setting, my base assumption is that it's a good guy. You can put like a sheep head on a dude and he can look quite threatening. You know, maybe it's just extra weird that he's a sheep, but I don't know. It's a little challenging. It helps that, I mean, I say sheep, some beastmen are more like goats. And I do think that they've become goatier and less sheepy as things progressed, largely because, you know, we associate goats with the devil and with being sinister and with lots of negative qualities that we don't associate with sheep. But either way, you have to emphasize what's frightening about animals in order to make Beastmen frightening. Because the reality is that, like, I look at a goat and I'm like, oh, goat is friend. But the truth is that goat thinks very differently than I do and it doesn't really have my best interests at heart. Now, it can't do me any harm because it's just a little goat. But what if it was, you know, inhabiting the body of a big yoke dude with a halberd? Well, that might change things considerably. And then also, what if there were hundreds of other ones? There's something about the face of, you know, a sheep or goat, the nostrils and the eyes, the kind of overall shape of the face that has a certain weird quality to it, where it's kind of close enough to what we understand to be a face that we think that we can read facial expressions on it. But then also sometimes it just looks very alien, maybe because it's a little bit immobile. I don't know. Anyway, you have to think about what is horrible about beast and what is horrible about man, and then express that in the form of Beastman. And also, you can definitely get away with Beastman being a merely kind of tactical threat. They're big and they're strong. They plunder and they kill, and they're headed for this village and only you can stop them. We don't really need to think about, like, their horror aesthetics. They're scary for perfectly reasonable, mundane reasons. They're going to stab you with spears. That is scary. And the very fact that they tolerate mutants and mutants tolerate them should somehow be weird. It should be like watching a person hanging out with some poisonous snakes. What could possibly make these brutal, animalistic creatures, who spare none the rest of the time, put up with these wretches? The fact that they can do so is evidence of a greater and more sinister power behind them both, and that is concerning. All right, so that's what I think about Beastmen and mutants. Spiros, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, remember that if you'd like to be like Spiros and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we're gonna be taking a look at one of my favorite old school, new school dungeons as we look at the monsters of the Stygian Library. So I hope that you will join me then, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram @MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.